Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The state of South Dakota ratified the 19th Amendment on December 4th, 1919. But the debate over women's voting rights had already been rippling and raging across the prairie for decades. The conversation was influenced by climate, geography, immigration, and the forced removal of Indigenous people. As South Dakota makes plans for the 100th national anniversary of women's suffrage, we welcome Molly Rosem to In the Moment. She's an associate professor of history at the University of South Dakota and the Ronald R. Nelson Chair of Great Plains and South Dakota History. She's also co-editor of the book Equality at the Ballot Box, Votes for Women on the Northern Plains. And she joins us now on the phone. Dr. Rosem, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
This is such a fascinating conversation that, of course, we will be having all throughout 2020. But let's start with this idea that it's been 100 years this week since South Dakota ratified the 19th Amendment, but that conversation has started really decades earlier.
Sure. Well, and I'd just like to say that last night in the Capitol in Pierre, about 7 p.m., in front of a suffrage-themed Christmas tree, Governor Noem signed an official proclamation commemorating the 100th anniversary of South Dakota's ratification of the 19th Amendment. So that is one way we're sort of honoring the 100th anniversary and our participation in it.
And not insignificant that that is South Dakota's first female governor making that proclamation. That had to be a special moment, whatever your politics are.
Exactly. And she, in her inaugural speech, she actually, referenced woman suffrage and understood that, this was a historic moment. I am proud of how far we have come, she said.
And now so. You have to tell me what a suffrage-themed Christmas tree is.
Oh, well, at the Capitol, to celebrate the Christmas season, they have various trees decorated in all sorts of themes. And one of the themes this year was a suffrage one, a woman's suffrage one, where they to communicate the values of the suffragists.
Right. I'm just curious what the ornaments were. I want to get close up and see what's on that tree. But I guess we'll have to take a trip to Pierre to do that.
And there are a number of, I know friends have given me, there are a number of ornaments actually, in the shape of suffrage women. And, there's quite a bit of commercial stuff out there. So, and I imagine there's a good number of patriotic kind of flags and things.
There's going to be more, I think, as we look at the 100th anniversary. Let's talk about some of those women and who are some of the women who made a difference in women's suffrage here in the Great Plains.
Of course, there are very many of them. One of the important ones for this last moment of ratification of the 19th Amendment was Mary Mamie Shields Pyle. She was then president of League of Women Voters because South Dakota, of course, had passed women's suffrage in November 1918, but they were all there to push our governor, who at the time was Peter Norbeck, to go ahead, and they even envisioned being the first state to ratify the 19th Amendment. They weren't quite the first state, but they had to convince him to hold a special session because at the time, of course, South Dakota the legislature only met every other year, and it was the off year. And finally, the state's politicians agreed to pay the expenses themselves to come to the Capitol to have a special session to ratify the 19th Amendment. They were also going to be in town because of a new primary law and to do party business in a convention and elect nominees for the next election. But it was quite something. Once they got there, they wanted to do it in as little time as possible. So they met in a special session on December 3rd, 1919, and they introduced the resolution into both houses. It passed, but they had to wait a day. So then they came back at midnight. It was the midnight session. And shortly after midnight, they ratified it. And then many got on the trains at 2 in the morning to go back to their homes. So it was quite a story. And when the woman suffragists of the time, Mary Pyle being one of the ones to really lead this, told the story. She, you know, they stressed the winter months and people leaving their cattle, and one man, you know, rushing home from Minneapolis, telling his wife to send his clothes to appear later, and another one who supposedly had to use three different cars to get there because of the snow. So it was, you know, they were quite pleased with it all.
Yeah. So at that point, they are all in. But yet, I want to go back to this idea of it was they're not the first state. There's decades that go by where this conversation is you know,
yes.
There's an opportunity at 1889 at statehood to include this, to include women in the electorate, and that doesn't happen. What's going on there with that conversation so long? Yeah.
Well, and that's part of the significance of why this was so important to be early to ratify is South Dakotans and suffrage advocates, men and women, have been working on this for years. Since 1868-69 territorial session was the first, and then our Constitution of 1889 actually required the state legislature to pass a referendum for the people to vote on in 1890 at our first post-statehood election. South Dakota had actually six campaigns to win woman suffrage. It may have been, I'm not entirely sure on this, but it may have been the most campaigns in any state. So the fact that, you know, it's wonderful on, you know, on one hand we had so many campaigns, but of course, it suggests it failed many times, but it does mean that South Dakotans were talking about woman suffrage for 50 years. Mm-hmm. It was always a part of our political debate and through the ups and downs of it. And I think that that is why they were so interested in sort of saying, let us be first in ratifying, because now that we won this vote. The other thing was, when woman suffrage was passed in 1918, it was passed as a part of a larger bill that refined voting rights generally, or voting requirements generally in the state. And so suffrage was sort of submerged there in that victory. So,
and for clarity for listeners, when you say 1918, that's when it's in the state. And then 1919 is when we ratify the amendment itself.
Yes.
So people are clear about why we're throwing out those two different years here.
Yes.
What are some of the challenges? Because clearly some of the things we still deal with in South Dakota were challenges back then, such as, the distance and the rural nature of the state and the weather.
Well, yeah. In fact, that 1890 campaign, the state was gripped in drought. You know, people didn't have money to support a campaign, and, you know, riding on wagons and horses, and the letters of the suffragists talk about, you know, and they tried to reach everyone in the community. They went county, their organizations spread across counties and townships, and, you know, they tried to reach everyone, and it was sometimes a struggle to get there, definitely, and then to win the support. Many in the state were, you know, some of the challenges that they felt were there were liquor interests who felt that if women had the power to vote, they would make the state always a prohibition state.
Right.
So that was a challenge.
Tell me in your research, because some of the things as I read through the book Equality at the Ballot Box, I'm just getting mm-hmm. started on it. I'm so excited to keep going and have this, we're going to have so many conversations in 2020.
Yeah, yeah.
Are some of the things that the anti-suffragists are really saying, some of the excuses that now seem humorous, offensive, mm-hmm. and familiar? All at the same time, as you do research and connect with other historians, what are some of the things that you heard people were saying that why we didn't need women in the ballot box?
Well, one of the persistent challenges they had is many said, well, women didn't want it. Mm-hmm. Women didn't want the vote. Women didn't want the vote. And in response to that, the suffragists filed massive petitions with all sorts of signatures across the state saying, yes, we want the vote. They didn't want to they thought that this was not a realm for women to participate in. And you have to remember, back then, a lot of, although things were reforming, we didn't have the standard polling places we do now in community centers and armories and thing and whatever is available. You know, a lot of times these elections and balloting were done in bars or places women didn't want to be, and so there was an unsavory aspect to it. And many women were, you know, convinced that they would be better off influencing their husbands and the national scene. Paula Nelson, in the book Equality at the Ballot Box, she has a long article on really considering deeply women's, rural women's ideas about womanhood and how, you know, they just clung to some of the traditional roles and felt that that was their place.
Your influence in politics is by conversation with your husband, for example.
Yes, yeah. Or your son. You know, the way you raise them, the kind of home atmosphere you give and, you know,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
I want to talk about what's planned for the centennial celebration in South Dakota, but I also want to touch on this idea that as we celebrate and use that word freely, there's also a reckoning that comes with the women's suffrage movement, forced removal of indigenous people, racism and partnerships with slavery, pro-slavery factions. There's a lot to reckon with as well. What are some of those, as you see it, questions that we need to be asking as we celebrate 100 years about the cost?
Well, the costs are, you know, there was much delay in terms of letting indigenous people vote in the state, you know, not just women, but men too, all indigenous people. I mean, I think it's not until about 1951 that, you know, most of the barriers are taken away, and we still have voting rights challenges. We're still, South Dakota is still considered under the voting rights law of 1964. But my own research deals somewhat with this, and it made settlers or settler society, you know, a little nervous that indigenous men might be voting in 1889. And while our state constitution didn't say anything about how or what the procedure would be for indigenous peoples to vote, all of a sudden, politicians and some businessmen around the state became nervous, and they tried to, in 1890, restrict Native voting. Now, that particular measure lost for many reasons, but there was a law later put in 1903 to restrict voting in the state, and then there were other federal laws that kept Natives from voting, too, so there was a struggle.
So you have this intersection between restrictions on voting and forced citizenship at the same time.
Yes, 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 definitely, definitely. And as far as, you know, my research has revealed so far, we do have one mixed Dakota woman who was born in Vermilion, and she ends up working for the Equal Suffrage Society in the early 1890s and early 1900s. She lives on an allotment near Pier and was very active with the newspaper press and even was a delegate to the National American Woman Suffrage Association in 1907 and 10. But we don't have as much evidence. But in that case, we see, you know, women thinking that there's a potential, indigenous women thinking there's a potential with the larger movement to push voting rights forward. Mm. And possibly women, you know, women could be allies. But it takes a long time, and there's a lot of beliefs that have to die before indigenous peoples are given the basic right to vote, not mentioning anything that might restrict it.
Right. Let's talk about the centennial celebration yesterday and the delegation and what happens next here in South Dakota.
Well, there is a group of about 50 or so women who've come together with the endorsement of Governor Noem, and we're an all-volunteer, nonpartisan group, hoping to spur activities and discussion about women's suffrage and voting rights, and to encourage voting in this upcoming election year. And we're hoping to have many activities and events, and soon, I don't think it's quite up yet, but soon we'll have a website that hopefully members of our state can go to see what might be going on women's suffrage. We're working under the phrase, her vote, her voice.
All right. Lots.
So much is to be unfolded over the next few months, looking up to August 26th, of course, when the federal 19th Amendment is certified by the U.S. Congress, and then women vote for the first time in 1920. So the election will be very historic, too.
Yeah, and it's a book whose time definitely is, time has come, and the timing is really effective. It's called Equality at the Ballot Box, Votes for Women on the Northern Great Plains, and it's really digging into research from various scholars about what was happening in places like Wyoming and in the Dakotas and beyond. Molly, thank you so much for being here. We look forward to spending a lot of time with you next year.
Great. Thanks for having me.